Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hey, Tay, doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Doing better with spring springing on us.
It is. Well, I don't want to be too preemptive because today absolutely feels like spring. It is 61 degrees in New York City. It's beautiful out. The sun is out. It comes with like the shared fear of. This is something I was just discussing with one of my coworkers the day. Anytime it's a nice day, especially in early spring in New York City, you're like, oh, how nice out. Oh, God, some restaurant's getting destroyed right now. Somebody with outdoor seating is getting...
Everybody's
just
showing
in
up.
...in the weeds, yeah. Just getting just the shit kicked out of them. It's been a while. I mean, I've, you know, not working consistently in restaurants for a couple of years now because of the plague. It's been a while since I've had those feelings of waking up on a nice spring day and going, oh, what a beautiful day. Oh, God, I work tonight. Oh, no.
Yeah, that's like we go to that rooftop cafe here at Rooftop Bar, and very rarely do we go to the outside part. They have a smaller inside part with inside seating. But it's been too cold to enjoy the outside part. They do have some heaters out there, but unless you're sitting right under one, forget it. It's just too cold.
Well, hopefully it's here to stay. I mean, I'm gonna knock on wood when I say that, but I'm ready for it. This new place I'm working at keeps warning me, like, however busy you think we get, just wait till the spring. And I'm like, okay, I just want it to happen so I know.
Yeah. So I just... Yeah, that's right. You haven't gotten experience that yet.
But I have experienced some new drinks this week. But what about you, Dad? Have you had anything good to drink this week?
Well, it's nothing new, but it's improving one that I was already drinking.
Oh.
We went to that rooftop bar that I was talking about last week, and we ordered their espresso martini, and Riley and I both ordered it, and we both noted that's better than the one we make at home. So we asked them, can you give us your recipe? And so what they use, instead of making espresso, which I guess this makes sense, you know that iced coffee that comes in the bottle, it's got like the green label, it's like Stoke, S-T-O-K,
oh, yeah,
or something
yeah,
like
yeah.
that. It's that one, that's what they use for their espresso. And for their vodka, they use Pinnacle whipped vodka. And it makes it, I don't know why, but it's very creamy and smooth. And here's the other thing. When we would do that drink, we would do 2 ounces of vodka, 1 ounce of Kahlua, 1 ounce of the coffee or espresso, whatever it was. They do 2, 2, and 2. And it makes it really chocolatey and rich. and it was a really good drink. And so we decided we got to get a bottle of that and try that. So we tried it at home. Sure enough, we were able to recreate it. And so it's a much improved espresso martini.
Huh. Well, I mean, that's a whipped cream flavored vodka, correct? Is what that whipped is? Well, that's interesting. You know, I also saw, I haven't tried it yet, but I also saw a variation of an espresso martini this week that was going around on TikTok that caught my interest. Sounds unholy, but the geekier part was that they subbed out the simple syrup, which is often included, for sherry, for Pedro Jimenez sherry, or like sweet sherry. And I love that idea because I love sherry in general, and sherry and espresso martini makes so much sense. But then after they made their espresso martini, they grated Parmesan cheese on top of it.
Oh my gosh.
And apparently it's delicious.
Wow. I don't know if I could be that adventuresome putting cheese in my drink.
I mean, I feel like it. I get it. Like coffee, like after dinner, coffee, cheese plate, that kind of vibe. Like it makes sense. Cheese goes great with sweet ingredients. The notes, the points all connect, but I don't know if I've had like drinks with blue cheese stuffed olives or, you know, like that kind of thing. I've used feta cheese brine in cocktails before, but I've never just put straight up cheese. So I don't know if you've had the espresso martini with the grated Parmesan cheese, that trend that's happening, let me know what you think. I'm curious. I want to try it.
Now, I did try one other addition to it. Since this was St. Patrick's Day when we were doing this, I had a bottle of creme de menthe in there, and the espresso martinis were so chocolatey and creamy, I thought, you know what? If I put just like a quarter ounce of creme de menthe in there, it would be like one of those Girl Scout cookies, like one of those thin mints, you know? So I put that in there, and it did kind of change the color. It was like a greenish brown instead of just brown.
Oh, yeah?
And the foam on top was more of a green. But it was really good. If you like mint, it was really good. It wasn't overpowering. I just used a quarter ounce of it in the mix. So, you know, there was 6 other ounces working against that quarter ounce. But it just had enough of a mint flavor where you almost smelled it more than you really tasted it, you know? But it was pretty good. Chocolate and mint.
That is a wild combination. I guess not that wild, but...
that was St. Patrick's Day. I had to get the green in there.
Yeah, I know. I was working in a bar on St. Patrick's Day, but I guess it was too... I think it was a combination of it's a fancy bar and it's also in a very gay neighborhood. And I think it was just too fancy and too gay to recognize St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, I was going to say, you could serve my mint espresso cocktail next time.
That sounds very fancy. I mean, that being said, like, I am both fancy and gay and would happily serve St. Patrick's Day cocktails. So, you know, no stereotypes, please.
Put a little mint leaf garnish on top.
Yeah, why not? So
what about you? You have any different ones?
What have I done that's not just been working? I was really happy to, you know, we talked about them a few weeks ago. We talked about the Paper Plane, of course, a few weeks ago. We also mentioned the Naked and Famous as a drink that's sort of a spinoff of that. And the other night, there were some customers in my bar, and they were talking to the other bartender about, like, oh, we like mezcal, but we also like these kind of drinks. Like, do you know anything like that? And the other bartender was sort of giving them some options, and I was like, Naked and Famous. I think you should offer them a Naked and Famous. And the other bartender knew what that was, so they were like, oh, wait, yes, actually, you should try that. So the other bartender made them some Naked and Famouses, and they were absolutely keyed in on it, like, oh, this is our new favorite drink. And so, like, you know, to remember what it tasted like, we made a little one to drink behind the bar together. it's been a while. Like, that's one of my favorite drinks. But, you know, sometimes you need to remake one of your favorite drinks and go like, oh, yep, still one of my favorite drinks. So just happy to see that. There's a moment happening right now, and I'm calling it now. The Paper Plane is having a moment in cocktail scenes right now. And thus it makes sense that all of its spinoffs will also have a moment. So get your Amaro Nonino on order. Bone up on your Naked and Famouses if you're behind the bar. I think we're going to all be making Paper Planes this summer.
Yeah, well, I tried to cue our guy in when we were when we were there doing the espresso martinis, and I went up and asked him, because he said that he's the one that put together that particular way to make it. And I said, well, let me ask you this. What do you think about the paper plane?
All my vast conversation like that.
Yeah. Well, we were already talking about he came up with the combination for the espresso martini. So I said, well, what do you think about the paper plane? He goes, oh, that's a good one, but I can't ever find that. I said, Amaro Nonino? He said, yeah, I can't ever find that. And I said, yeah, that is a hard ingredient. But I said, he said, we do have some other Amaros. I said, well, they might work, but they won't be as good as Nonino. Like I know something. I just fake it till you make it.
Hey, see, but you know what? You're spreading that paper plane, that thing that's going to happen. Like, that's what it takes. People like you that go and like, well, paper plane. And someone's like, I don't know how to make that. Maybe I should know how to make that. Or maybe I should be able to make that. And it's going to happen. That's how these things happen. That's how we ended up with the summer of espresso martinis, or the summer of Aperol spritz, or the summer of Frosé. Like,
Frosé, yeah.
This is around the time where everybody starts asking for the same thing, and then it happens.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was trying to get them included there. You know, you're thinking about that. You're at a rooftop place. It's starting to be spring. That's a good drink. It's a nice, refreshing spring, summer type drink, really.
Mm-hmm. Rx is a frozen, too.
Yeah.
So we're definitely not talking about a spring, summer type drink today. But we are talking about a drink that kind of spins off of last episode. We talked about orange bitters. And this is also, well, this is partially inspired by a spring menu. So my new bar job, we're about to drop our spring menu, and there is a bijou on the menu.
A bijou?
I knew what a bijou was as far as the ingredients in it. I didn't really know any of the history behind it. But I thought that for my own work benefit and for your all's hopefully as well, we should do some research on it.
Well, the only reference I've ever heard to the bijou is that I seem to recall some famous theater that was the bijou, but
that's true.
I never heard it in reference to a drink before. I didn't know about it. I guess I was probably alive pre-prohibition, so since it went away then, you know, no, I forgot about it.
You weren't, but...
I feel like it sometimes.
That's definitely not true, but yes.
I lived through those days, and I don't want to see them again.
It is an old drink. The bijou, or the jewel, is the name translates into French. I don't know. Maybe this. I thought it was maybe the Swifties bringing it back. I know Taylor Swift has that song Bejeweled, so yeah. I feel like if you wanted to make a Taylor Swift-themed cocktail, and why wouldn't you, and you wanted to do a play off of bijou and call it the Bejeweled, I offer that up to you, Swifty bartenders. My sister's one. I'm not one. I'm so take that. But yeah, let's talk about the bijou.
All right, let's do.
So the bijou is sort of a martini variant. It comes around late 1800s, and that's really when we get a lot of. This is similar time period to when we're talking about the tuxedo and all. Like there's this time period where we try to separate these drinks as separate drinks. But really, just people were doing a lot of things in the martini family at this time period with the spirits they had. So it makes sense that they're same with a tuxedo, where there's like 1,000 variants, and then we kind of settle on a few that like these are what a tuxedo are or is. There are a couple. Same with the bijou, where there were lots of different varieties of this drink that all kind of historically get called a bijou. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. I don't think it's that structured. I just think people were playing in the martini flavor at that time because it was popular.
Yeah.
That I mean spirit forward stirred drinks. But modern day, we think of a bijou as being sweet vermouth, green chartreuse, and dry gin, along with some orange bitters. The proportions change over time. The original recipe was all equal parts. Nowadays, we tend to do a stronger pour of gin, less of the sweeter components. But that's a palate change. The drink, it's usually credited to Harry Johnson, who is a famed barman of the same time period, but there are some genetic roots that precede this drink that kind of go back also to that mass conglomerate confusion of martinis of the time period. People were just experimenting. That's, you know, a lot of stuff was going on.
You know, the one thing that I had to make note of, though, just because I am who I am, is it was too bad that he has such an unfortunate name.
I know. Literally, I mean, there's so many articles that I read that were like, not just a name you prank call, like, you prank call with. And I'm like, who would do that, Dad?
Well, the first thing I thought of was Bart Simpson calling the bar.
Yeah.
Do we have a Harry Johnson? Is there a Harry Johnson in here? Is anybody here have a Harry Johnson with them? So, I guess he got that a lot, although I don't know if that was as prevalent in those days. Maybe that was one of a later lingo. I'm not sure.
It's just, I know that the Simpsons are known for predicting the future. Did the Simpsons also predict the past?
That's right.
Johnson.
I'll return it to the adults now.
All right. Well, we're going to come back to old Harry Johnson in a minute, but he's usually the one credited for the drink, not necessarily the, or he's, well, all right, he's not the originator of the name, but maybe the drink, but let me explain. So the earliest predecessor is considered to be Jerry Thomas's Fancy Gin Cocktail, which was published in his 1862 How to Mix Drinks, which is really a wildly different drink. I mean, there's gin there, yes, but there's also curacao and bitters and gum syrup. There's a lot of stuff that genetically is completely different from the modern day bijou. Now, the reason that this gets linked to the bijou is because that same recipe gets sort of taken and tinkered with by a bartender named Christopher Lawlers in his 1895 publication, Mixicologist, which I don't know why we went with mixologist and not mixicologist.
Mixicologist.
It sounds like you have a beat there to like push your glasses up in between that I like.
Sounds like an oncologist. That doesn't sound good.
Mixicologist. Lawler published a recipe that was very similar to that Harry Johnson, or to that, sorry, that Jerry Thomas recipe. That was gin, curacao, and sweet vermouth. And he called that drink the bijou. So that's the first time we see the name bijou used for a cocktail. So it's this predecessor to a Jerry Thomas cocktail made by Lawler. So the idea that like Harry Johnson just invented the bijou from nothing, probably not true. There was already a cocktail by its name. It already had some overlapping ingredients. I do like, just as an aside, Christopher Lawler is one of the first person that kind of, and this is also another thing where Harry Johnson's often credited as the first person to ever give like how to bartend guides along mm-hmm. with recipes.
Yeah.
Which he did a lot more extensively than anybody else. But Lawler's maybe the first one to make notes in his bartending book about how a bartender should behave. And I really liked that he gave this breakdown of what a good bartender should be. And he says this. He says, he should be a man of good character, with straight personal habits, good temper, cheerful, obliging, wide awake, quick, graceful, attentive, sympathetic, yet too smart to be worked, neither glum nor too talkative, of neat appearance and well-dressed.
That's every bartender I've ever seen.
Everyone, every single one. I do like the not too talkative part. I do think that's the part, like, no, don't be too, like, be there, but don't be too there.
It sounds like the list that it sounds like the list that the children on Mary Poppins put out for their nanny.
Yeah. But I feel this. I'm like, I think all those things matter. That's fine. I try for all that. too smart to be worked. Like, I don't know. I'm here to serve you, but not too much.
Yeah, that's what you all need to place when you're advertising for any more help. That's what you need to put in there. Help wanted.
I'm literally going to copy paste that. Like, what am I looking for? This.
Yeah.
I wouldn't get hired at my own job because it does need appearance and well dressed.
Well, they have you in a uniform, so that you'd have to be. Yeah.
Yeah, my new job absolutely put me in a uniform. It's like, here you go. Here are clothes. You have to wear them. Okay.
Yeah. So if it's not neat appearance, it's their fault.
Yep. But that was Christopher Lawler, who's, you know, an important figure in bartending that doesn't get cropped up like a lot of these names. But But back to Harry Johnson. So his version pops up late 1800s, early 1900s. He publishes it in his 1900s Bartender's Manual. And that's where we finally get the chartreuse, along with some orange bitters. So the Curacao goes away, we get chartreuse introduced, which is really, by modern terms, I mean, that's just a totally different drink. Like, we're making entirely new drinks at this point. But it does keep that same name, the Bijou, which he accredits to being inspired by the jewel tones of the three main ingredients. So gin is the diamond, sweet vermouth is the ruby, and chartreuse is the emerald.
Ooh, and they all make the Bijou, the jewel.
Which works out to be like an for a drink that, I mean, that's not, the name does not come from the color, because as we've now learned, the name was already associated with this drink before the chartreuse. But anyone that knows color theory knows when you put something that's red and something that's green in a glass, what do you get?
Brown.
Yeah. It's just a dirty brown color here. I know. The baby one. You can see here.
Yeah, I saw two of them when I looked this up. Now, one of them looked a little bit reddish. I'm not sure what they did different. But the other one was definitely brown, and that's what I thought. To have something that you're calling the jewel, I understand the three elements. But like you said, when you put them together, it's just brown.
It is not. And I mean, it's a cute story for the name. And it's funny because I do think the original recipe, the Lawler recipe that had Curacao and sweet vermouth and gin, I mean, ostensibly, I mean, it depends on what Curacao, you know, Curacaos can be, have kind of an orange tint. They can be clear. Sweet vermouth can be anywhere from brown to red. So it's hard to say, like, it could have had a beautiful, like, burnt, like, red kind of color to it, or an orangish red color to it. It could have been a bit of a jewel tone. The modern Bijou definitely doesn't have one. Sometimes I see them and they're green and I'm like, what are you doing that's green? It shouldn't be green. But that's where the name came from, according to him, not historically. And you know, he puts it in his book. But I do think, like, Harry Johnson's a cool character in bartending. A bit of his history. So he was born in Prussia in 1845. And his first career was actually being a sailor. He was a sailor for much of his young life, until he was injured on board a ship. And he broke both an arm and a hip, and he was left to recuperate in San Francisco in 1861.
So you said, you're no good to us, you're injured. You stay here, we're leaving, we got a ship to run.
You live in San Francisco now, buddy.
Yeah.
Peace.
There you go. He had a hell of a mustache, too.
He did.
He had one of those.
He earned that mustache, though.
Yeah, that was one of those Prussian mustaches there with the big, thick wrap around the, go down the lip and around the jaws.
Well, you know, and he was a survivor. He was jettisoned in San Francisco. He healed. He got back to work first as a kitchen boy in the Union Hotel. He worked his way up to a bartender and then eventually manager. He met Jerry Thomas. So that first dude we mentioned, we've mentioned Jerry Thomas a few times before as a very famed, like, one of the first dudes to write things down. We made that joke just like last week.
Right.
So he met him at some point, and I guess it wasn't like a good meeting. They kind of developed a bit of a rivalry between them. But eventually, Harry moves to Chicago and he opens his own bar, which is successful. Though eventually that bar is lost in the Great Chicago Fire of 1871, and that prompts him to move to New York, where in 1877, he bought a bar called the Little Jumbo, which was a bar where Jerry Thomas used to work. So more of this, whatever, this Britney ex Christina, whatever's happening here. So he works, or he buys Jerry Thomas's old bar he used to work at. And so Jerry Thomas is very publicly is like, that Little Jumbo, I don't know her.
He said, nah, I had nothing to do with that. I don't even remember that bar. I don't think I ever worked there.
Yeah, just like absolutely wrote it off. Mm-hmm. And the rivalry came to a head. This is so, because the thing is, you know, when we think of historical figures, we generally separate them from ourselves. Like, people behave differently somehow in old-timey days. And yet when I hear this story about this event that happened between Jerry Thomas and Harry Johnson, it sounds like something that I've seen so many of my toxic bar bros, like the kind of behavior they've engaged in. I'm like, nothing changes. So apparently, Jerry Thomas, who made that first version of the Bijou, he showed up at Johnson's bar, and he called him an amateur after being served a specific type of punch that he believed should be only served at a certain temperature. So he threw the punch on the floor and, like, went on a rant about the proper way to serve this punch. And that was their big, you know, if it was modern time, that would have been the page six expo, the paparazzi TMZ moment. But
yeah, it's a wonder in those days that they didn't duel over it or something.
I guess this was a bartending duel of some sorts. Like, I'm going to order a drink, and then I'm going to throw it on the ground dramatically if I don't think you made it correctly. It was a bowl of Tom and Jerry. That's what it was. Very silly. Both of these were incredibly established, talented barmen.
They didn't need to compete. There's plenty of room for everyone.
Well, yes, absolutely. And it's just, you know, I find it comforting to see that people back in the day, when all of the cocktail, like, laws and formulas that we follow today were being established, there were a bunch of silly little boys running around making messes just like today. It makes me feel less alone. I would like to know the history of the people that were working alongside of these people and putting up with it, because I'm pretty sure that's my historical predecessor, but, you know, feel comforted.
I just think it's interesting how, I guess in those days, you didn't have a lot of processed things, you know, drinks and stuff, sugary drinks and mixes and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, they invented bitters, they mixed the different alcohols, and of course you got the things that, you know, that go along with it, you know, like your grenadines and some things like that, but they're all geared towards specifically drinking alcohol, not just something, you know, like a Coke or a Sprite or orange juice or something like that, that are made to drink, you know, without alcohol. So they used all the other things on it, and then that just almost got swept under the table for so long. That's just amazing to me that we lost the cocktail culture just about entirely and had to wait for a renaissance of somebody to come along like Dale DeGroff to resurrect it back up, and now it just seems like everybody's headed in that direction again, and that's good.
Well, so what you mean is like making a drink that tastes balanced out of all alcohol, which I think to any bartender sounds like, well, we do that every day. But yes, I agree with you. To most people that go out and have a drink, that's not the way you think of alcohol. You think of spirits as something that you need juice or a soda or something to balance it with.
Yeah, most people will pick one spirit that they like and mix it with something that's not alcoholic, you know, that's your mixer. And really, I don't think your best drinks come from that.
Well, I think that it's not a matter of, I agree in that it is, that's what bartending is. It's not like maybe not the best drinks come from that. Ultimately, the best drink is the thing you enjoy the most. So if you like a vodka soda, have at it. But I do agree the art of bartending is our ability to mix spirit with spirit. Like, yes, making an infused syrup, making a tincture, like, that stuff can add into it. But I still am a bigger fan of bartending that's bartending with spirits. Like, we're not cooks. We're not chefs. We're bartenders. We should work with spirits. And I always respect cocktails more when they're made with spirits with slight modifiers than anything else. That's just my personal preference. But I do think that's the thing that we lost. I agree with you. Like, this concept of a drink is spirit plus something that's not spirit is a very modern concept that kind of took over the whole world of drinking. But this was clearly not the case with the Bijou. It was all booze all day, all the time. So a little bit more about Johnson. So after retiring from bartending, he became the first bar consultant in 1890. So he was the first, not only did he publish the first bartender's manual, he's also the first person to be like, no, I'm not going to bartend for you. I will show up and teach your bartenders how to bartend, and I will inform your bar how to have good drinks, which is now just an entire job. Like, people are hired for that job. Yeah, I work for people that do that job.
That guy on TV in Bar Rescue, he does that.
We should do an episode on that guy, because I hate that guy. But yes, that is the modern twisted version of that job.
A modern twisted version. That guy does get on your nerves after a while.
I hate that guy. If I were working at a bar and that guy showed up, I would just leave. Say, I don't care.
He's always ready to get in a fight with the owner at every episode.
Well, it's just like, I don't know. What is it? The weird funnel he always wants to put in every bar where it makes people's pelvises touch? You know,
well, I don't know about that.
He builds the weird banquette onto the dance floor so that people have to like go through
to
a little
funnel them in. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I thought you meant actual funnel.
It makes people touch and has to make them funnel in. And it's like, that's gross. You're gross. Anyway.
Well, I thought he was setting up the flow to get them to flow through the bar so they came by the bar more often.
No. It's just to make people have to interact with each other.
I didn't realize that.
Pelvic.
I thought it was all about the drinks.
It should be all about the drinks, man. All right, so weird aside to the man I hate the most. I do not hate many men. I don't hate most men. There's one man that I hate, and it's that man.
Well, then stay out of New Jersey. Isn't that where he's from?
I don't know. If he ever showed up at a bar I was working at, I'd be like, I quit. Because if you're here, I don't want to work here. You're going to turn this in to a sports bar with an all-black interior and hideous neon lighting and a weird pelvic funnel. I don't want to work here.
The pelvic funnel is essential. No, just ask Harry Johnson.
We should do an episode of this guy. Because there's one episode where he goes to like a pirate-themed bar. Which, look, let me say this. No one's rolling into the pirate-themed bar and saying, you know what, this place could be cool if there weren't pirates. You go to the pirate bar for pirates! And he rolls
That's right.
Like, we gotta get rid of the pirates, y'all. Like, no! Like, he makes it like a corp... Like, calls it like Corporate Bar USA or some shit. Like, it's awful. It's awful. Like, let the place breathe. Anyway, don't get me started on that topic. I know his name. I won't say it. Not out of respect, but out of... He doesn't deserve to be on my tongue.
We're going to that pirate bar for a little R&R.
Let's go back to some bartenders that I kind of respect. All right. So Harry Johnson. Harry Johnson, first bar consultant, long before people would ruin the job, makes the first bartender's manual. His bartender's manual is actually pretty cool. I've seen some prints from it. It's just like literally like, how do you serve? You know, these great like old prints of like, how do you make six glasses of champagne at once? And it's just a weird old-timey barman trying to pour six glasses at once. They're great illustrations of nothing else. But it's cool. It's like he was the first person to really think about how do you not just make drinks, but how do you run a bar, which is important. You know, people have written books upon that since then, but he's the first. And you know, as you mentioned, the bijou is one of those drinks that fell out of favor post-prohibition. It was brought back during the modern cocktail revival, again, by none other than Dale DeGroff. He found it in Johnson's book and remixed it a bit for the modern palate. That's where we get that change up. Instead of the original Johnson recipe, which was all equal parts, DeGroff added a bit more gin, a bit less everything else, and that's the recipe that's genuinely followed today. You will still get people making a classic bijou here and there, but a classic bijou is a lot. And I like drinks that are a lot, but a classic bijou is probably too much.
I understand it falls kind of in a Negroni category.
You know, I would say it would fall in a Negroni category in the modern sense, like in the sense that with a high, because if you actually do an ounce of chartreuse, an ounce of vermouth, an ounce of gin, it errs so on the sweet side that it's not like, you know, if you sit with it, you can sip on it. I mean, again, that's a different palate. That's kind of a recognized palate change from the past and out. But, I mean, nowadays, even the modern Bishu with a significant, like a 3-to-1-to-1 gin to vermouth to chartreuse, it still plays pretty sweet, pretty strong, kind of like a Negroni does. So, yeah.
All right. Negroni, not my cup of tea.
Well, maybe. I mean, I think if a Negroni's not your cup of tea, you might not like it. I mean, you should try a Bishu. I think if nothing else, I like the audacity of any cocktail that includes green chartreuse, because it's just, it's an expensive ingredient, it's a delicious ingredient, and it's a hard ingredient to balance. So, you know, you get a good assertive enough vermouth, you get a good dry, you want your most classic London dry gin, it's a great drink. Stir it up.
I have to recommend that one to Mom, because I think she would probably like that one.
I think Mom would like a Bijou.
Yeah, she likes gin mostly as her go-to spirit.
Well, or you could just, you know, you guys could take a trip up here and see me when the menu launches.
Well, that's true.
You're
pretty busy, though. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I won't be able to see you, but you can come to a restaurant and see me.
I come to your restaurant. Well, they let us sleep in the back.
No, you can sleep in my apartment. You just got to come to see me. You got to come to my restaurant. That's where I live now.
We'll just hang out all day, and we'll be like those bar flies they wrote about in that one book.
Well, there you go. There's the Bijou. It's a delicious. I mean, it is. I will say it's a very herbal. It's a very assertive cocktail. It's very strong. It is definitely not the thing, like, heat of the summer, refreshing drink that you want to just throw down. No, it's absolutely not that. It is.
Yeah.
Herbal, aggressive, assertive, boozy, but it's a great late night sipper. It's great if you love a Negroni and you want something different. I think that's a great alternative. If you love herbal medicinal cocktails, it's great to add to your repertoire. And you can also play around. You know, like, I think those weird like proto bijus are also interesting too, to play around with the proportions. The Curacao, we rarely see Curacao used in stirred drinks, popular stirred drinks in the modern era. So, like, something to play around with.
Yeah. So now we know about the Bijou and why it's good to have a Harry Johnson around.
You're going to come back to that, whether I like it or not. That's okay. That's what you do.
There's a 10-year-old boy living inside of me.
Well,
maybe 8.
I think 8 sounds appropriate. All right. Thank you, Dad, and eight-year-old boy inside of you for being here.
Well, thank you, Tate, for having me. I learned all about the jewel of the bar, the Bijou.
He can't drink. You can.
I'll drink for him.
There was a weird, you know, this is an aside. We're closing up here, but there are a couple cocktail recipes that are from like the late 90s, early 2000s that translate the Bijou to the Jewel. Like for some reason, like, oh no, Americans, we need to translate this. It's like a bad dubbing of cocktailing. So you will come across recipes where sometimes it's just called the Jewel. It's the Bijou. It's the name. All right, sorry.
We just had to be literal.
Either way. You can find us on social media, on NeatTheBoozeCast at gmail.com, NeatBoozeCast on Instagram. You can also go and discuss your feelings about the Bijou, or, I don't know, Harry Johnson's. Where can you do that, Dad?
At NeatTheBoozeCast group page or on Facebook. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry that wants to come can come.
Yep. All right. That's it. I have been to the show.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
me. We'll be right back. or some version thereof. This is the little boy in the fun episode.
I don't know what that means.
I couldn't help it. I just kept picturing Bart Simpson with his usual routine where he calls the bar and Bo's answering it. Hey, is anybody here? Is anybody here with a Harry Johnson?